Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It's deja vu all over again. The MOU ending the Iran war is in tatters. At the NATO meeting in Ankara, peace with Russia was not on the agenda. Instead, the now familiar agreement incapable approach has overwhelming sway. It is obvious the West is unable to think strategically. Crosstalking the lack of strategy and much more, we are joined by Alistair Crook in Rome. He is a former British diplomat, author, and internationally recognized expert on geopolitics. Alistair, it's wonderful to have you back on the program, and I'm going to cut to the chase right away. We have seen a Donald Trump essentially tear up the MOU during his trip to the NATO confab in Ankara. Apparently showing glee that the Ukrainians want to escalate the conflict against Russia. So my first question to you is kind of twofold here. Again, the West is showing, particularly the United States, the inability to formulate a strategy to resolve conflicts, the inability to come to any kind of agreement. And the flip side of that is that Russia and Iran have come to the conclusion that they cannot deal with the United States and come to an agreement. So there, on this very terrible note, there seems to be some symmetry.
Oh, well, you're right. Indeed. And they're not coming to an agreement because they are not looking for an agreement. In both cases, whether it is Russia or whether it is Iran, they are looking for the destruction of Russia. It's dissolution into, if you like, small ethnic, if you like, microstates, and for the West to be able to come back. There's a long history to that, 200-year history Western design to destroy Iran, and it goes back a long way, really, to the sort of late 1700s and to the 1850s, when there was a big emigration from the Pale of Settlement into the West. And Iran, it is very similar in that way, and I think this became clear. There was a moment when the Iranian leadership, one faction believed it was possible perhaps to get, use the understanding. It's not really an understanding. It's just a de-escalation framework. That's all. It's got nothing in it beyond frameworks for de-escalation. They thought they could use it to get to the point at which it would be possible to do some sort of understanding with the United States in return for some arrangement about nuclear issues, all sanctions would be lifted. I think it became obvious a little while ago to the leadership, particularly to the supreme leadership, that actually Iran was being played by the United States. It was quite obvious, to anyone who looked at it, nothing was coming from the U.S., promises, there'll be an advance of frozen assets. Where are they? They never came. All of the other elements to it just, were further away over the horizon. And in any case, it was quite clear, I think, to the leadership that when we talk about the nuclear issue isn't about the nuclear issue. It is about disarming Iran.
Exactly.
It is the disarmament program. Inserting inspectors and surprise, go anywhere, searches of all of the sort of darkest elements of the Iranian defense system so that it would be stripped naked and would be completely without defenses. So these two things are very similar. Yes, the aim for Russia is also that of the destruction of Russia and, of course, by de- de- if you like, by dividing it and by splitting it, if it's possible, to go back to the sort of the 90s, when the Harvard boys came in and could effectively take the country and buy it for peanuts.
But what both Iran and Russia have in common in dealing with the West is that they are demanding new security arrangements. In the case of Russia, we need there is a demand to go back to what we remember as the Helsinki process, where there's the indivisibility of security. No one is secure unless all are secure. And Iran is demanding the same thing in the Persian Gulf. And the West is just they're incapable of comprehending that there is such a thing as sovereign security. That's all Iran wants. And that's what Russia is demanding as well. NATO expansion was a threat. It was a security arrangement designed without Russia and against Russia. We have the same process in the Persian Gulf. We can go to Trump's famous or infamous Abraham Accords. That was an anti-Iranian alliance. And see, both countries are trying to break out of that.
I think it's a matter of not understanding. It's a matter of not wanting. I don't think that this is a project, as I say, an old project that goes back to the Enlightenment and it goes back to the 19th century. And it is about dissolving and destroying, if you like, nationalities. Mm-hmm. And it is to try and reduce all human sort of connections to family, to religion, to a sovereign state, and to dissolve them completely so that, in the words of Rousseau, a human just becomes a unit in a state enterprise, and that it is completely removed from all of the old connections, completely disembedded from anything to do with community. So I think, it's not so much they don't understand it. They have a very different understanding of the direction they want to go, which was the one that, in many ways, Russia experienced in 1970. Mm-hmm. The same sort of the same processes, the same sense of trying to destroy Russia as Russia, and to destroy, if you like, the church and all those connections. And of course, the monarchy, the Tsar, who was of course murdered in that process. So I think this is the unspoken war that continues on that we're not really allowed to talk about, which is the war that is a fight for what it is to be human, still, and also in that context, about civilization. Mm-hmm. Civilization has different components in different civilizations. One emphasizes perhaps the unseen more, others the more literal parts of it. And so the element, that whole process of civilization, is within the myth, within the narratives of civilization, that you have the architecture by which a people live. It is the stories, the moral stories, the old tales that come down. These are the things that by which people steer their life and which make, if you like, sense to give it purpose and to give it an element. Well, there are some people that don't like that very much at all. They don't want to be mere sort of, components within us. They want to control them and completely control us. For their own interests and then those purposes, whatever those interests are, but one of the interests is the destruction of Iran and also to take and secure Russia's resources. Yeah. Of course, it's more than that.
Yeah, but one of the things that we've seen looking at both the conflicts here is the limits of American military power. Extraordinarily, Donald Trump wants to return, it appears, to kinetic action against Iran. It didn't work the first time round, or actually the first time was a year ago, the second time in February of this year, and he wants a third round. What is he going to accomplish? What do they want to destroy that they haven't already destroyed?
No, it's not. I don't think really it was. I think one can't look. I mean, anyway, with Trump, is it as a sort of strategic check or a strategic move that he's making? He made this out of pique and anger. Yeah. You know, they'd hoped to pull a fast one during the funeral ceremonies that were taking place in Iran and Iraq by trying to move. I mean, coordinated by the U.S. Navy to move three or four vessels through the Hormuz using what they would describe as the American corridor and not the Iranian control of Hormuz to upset and damage the Iranian issue like control of Hormuz. And the Iranians responded in two cases by firing missiles at it. And in one case, the ship was on fire. I think it was a Qatari ship with liquefied gas. So I think he was angry at that. And so, just decided to hit up.
Yeah, but Alistair, the whole purpose of this program, actually I've titled it Absence of Strategy. That's not a strategy, what you just described. That's just petulant child.
Yes, as I said, it's peak and anger. And I mean, what's it going to achieve? On the one hand, you have Vance saying explicitly, listen, you know, every time if the Iranians try to open the Hormuz, we're going to hit them and we're going to attack them. And the Iranians said, if you try and do that to us, we're going to escalate. So what it means is that Trump has got himself into an escalation trap, and it's very difficult for him now to get out of it. And the clock is ticking in the economic cycle, and that is moving fast forward in terms of the supply of particularly that type of, if you like, heavy sulfur energy that you need to make diesel and kerosene for aircraft. And we're already, the inventories at the refineries are zero nearly. So it's coming. So what did he hope to gain by this? I think he thought, you know, he would get a quick win and say, look, I've got, you know, I got it open, five ships came through and the Iranians could do nothing. What a victory. Actually, what it has done is trap him, because there's not going to result in Hormuz being open. It's going to result in the opposite.
Yep.
The Iranians are going to actually squeeze Hormuz further, and they will retaliate two for one to every American attack.
All right, Alistair, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a quick break, and after that quick break, we'll continue our discussion on the lack of strategy. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the lack of strategy. Okay, Alistair, let's go back to NATO confab that just ended in Ankara. If you look at the news reports here, Trump, he didn't seem particularly engaged on that issue. He focused primarily on Iran. He mistaken Zelensky for Putin. He called the Islamic Republic of Japan. That caught everybody's attention. And then the Patriots were brought up. It would be a good idea to build Patriots in Ukraine. Again, this is not serious thinking here, but the Europeans got what they wanted. They seem to think that Trump is back on their side. The Europeans want war. Will they get it?
That's an important question. I don't think you can dismiss it entirely and say, because, you know, it's easy to say, and it would also be true to say, that the Europeans don't have the weapons, they don't have the financial resources, they don't have the armaments in industries for any sort of war against Russia. So what are they doing? Why are they doing? I think this, you know, really has to go back a long way, and it has to go back to what happened in 1987 when the Berlin Wall fell. And that was the point at which there should have been an understanding about the limits of the security interests of Russia and of Asia, and the limits of the security interests of NATO. And that should have been agreed. Only it wasn't. And it was left open. And since then, NATO has expanded. But then came a part. Then came a moment when it was quite clear. NATO is in Europe. If you ask some Europeans, some Americans, they say, well, you know, NATO in Europe was a good thing because it pacified Europe and they didn't fight each other in their tribal way. Yes, but of course, NATO then, what was NATO for? A purpose had to be invented. And after the war on terror, what was going to be the purpose? Well, only to defend against Russia, of course. That was the whole thing. And in the, people don't often understand that the EU is bound by treaty to follow the security league of NATO. So the Europeans have to fly the flag of war against Russia, the war against Russia. And so they talk all the time about war against Russia, and they don't have the ability to do that. But what they are trying to do is to show Trump that he was mistaken in thinking, as he seemed to some time ago, that, you know, there's no point spending too much capital on this conflict in Ukraine, because it was obvious. Russia was the stronger party. Ukraine was the weaker party. Russia would prevail ultimately, and that's how it would work out. And the Europeans are trying to say, no. Look, you know, now Russia is on the back foot, and it is Ukraine on the front foot. This is purely a psychological operation, a huge psychological operation to persuade Trump. So we had all the, you know, the visuals of sort of smoke rising over Moscow from kerosene and the warheads and things like this to give the impression. And it was carefully coordinated by the E3, that is Britain, France, and Germany, who wanted to showcase, if you like, Zelensky to Trump, first at the G7 and then at the European summit, to put in there and place and say these things to Trump. You know, no, I mean, you know, we're winning, we're on the front foot. And the whole purpose of this is really because the Europeans have so invested in the idea that, I mean, this is the only thing they stand for now. Yeah. They used to sort of stand for, clean energy and all of that. And that's all disappeared.
But Alice,
thing they have is this.
Yes, but what happens, and it's, I think it's already happened, the Russians say, okay, game on. Are they prepared for that? Okay. Also, everyone likes to invoke, and I can remember when the conflict started in February of 22, as I said, eventually we will have to deal with the issue of Article 5, which is grossly misunderstood in the public.
Yes.
Okay. Going back to the beginning, the Russians are saying game on. Are the Europeans prepared for that?
They don't believe it.
The lies we tell ourselves are very dangerous. Go ahead.
Exactly. No, they don't believe it. They don't believe it. You know, if you say, listen to what Putin has just said when he said, okay, I hear all the clamorings for war. We're ready. We're ready for it. And that is, in Europe, people say, you know, Putin is bluffy. He's not, look how many times he's had red lines and he said he's got red lines and he's got past the red line. It won't happen. And then the neocons come in and they tell the Europeans, oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's never any chance that Russia would use nuclear weapons because they would lose. And so they don't believe it. And this is a huge danger in my view. Because I don't believe Russia will continue to tolerate Europeans' power, ever longer range missiles go deep into Russia.
Well, all the more so if you pay attention or even believe the rhetoric coming out of Europe, the war with Russia is either next year or by 2030. They're preparing for it, allotting budgets for it. They've telegraphed this very clearly. So, you know, with the Article 5 in the back of your mind, the Russians will say, well, if war is coming, why don't we preempt it? We're more prepared than they are now. That's the logic of this. You want war? We're prepared for war. And so why wait for the inevitable? Why wait for it to come to you when you know war is coming, so you bring it to them? There's a logic there as well.
You know, that would be a sound strategy. And it would be an obvious strategy. And this is what I think is going to happen. But Russia will do it carefully, not going necessarily sort of all out, but it will use conventional weapons to begin with. And this is the lesson from Iran. You know, Iran has used conventional weapons in a very, you know, carefully measured way on targets that have been carefully chosen for their effectiveness and their purpose. And I think that is the message that has been heard in Russia. And I think we will see how it turns out. But I think, you know, these are two really important things that you're talking about. No, you know, the Europeans see this in a sort of grandiose narrative style. They want, you know, Ukraine as a sort of forward fist of Europe, sort of sitting on Russia's border. And they want America to come back into Europe. So you hear the sycophantic Secretary General of NATO saying, we love you, we love you, come back.
Alistair, there's an important question I want to ask you because we're rapidly running out of time. Finland has come out and volunteering to be a country that will America can base nuclear weapons. Does anybody in Europe follow what's going on in the Persian Gulf? I mean, the Gulf monarchies had all of the bases, American bases there, and they were either damaged or destroyed. I mean, doesn't somebody in Finland say, oh, maybe it's not a good idea to have forwarding bases for the Americans on Russia's border? Is there a learning curve in Europe at all?
No, none. And none. And also because, their sense is Article 5. It can never happen because Russia would never tackle Article 5. In my own belief, and if you are someone like Professor Mearsheimer, he would support it. I mean, as you know, Article 5 doesn't have automaticity. It just creates a meeting. Beyond that, I don't think some European states would support Britain or France or Germany if they tried to move towards nuclear weapons or some other structures like that. And I certainly don't think there's any appetite for that in America. I mean, in America, yes, the neocons and the others might want it, but there is a settled opinion about most Americans. We don't want to be involved in any further European wars. We've had enough of these Europeans. Let them fight it out if they want to fight it out. But America doesn't want to be a part of it. I think that, you know, is a big sort of sense about in the public sphere. That's how they feel.
You're asking countries in Europe, let's say, for example, a missile factory in Latvia or Germany was destroyed. Is that a reason to go into thermonuclear war with Russia?
As I say, I don't think it'll happen. I think that, first of all, I don't think even the Europeans will support that sort of response. And I think America will not. Article 5 will prove to be, if you like, a fabrication. It will prove to be hollow. It's there, but only in certain very limited circumstances. It won't. But this is the danger. The Europeans are heading out on this war front, not having the ability to launch it, and not even thinking about what sort of war. What are we talking about? Air war? Missile war? They can't be thinking about troops on the ground because they haven't got any. Not enough to even think about, you know, perhaps occupying a part of Ukraine. Nothing more than that. So, I mean, it's just going, but nonetheless, these things can be self-fulfilling. And you end up with a provocation, something happening, and something is then done by Russia to send a warning to Europe. Europe doesn't understand that this is a serious warning, so they then go on doing what they've been going on doing, and then it ends up with a serious response by Russia. And then we are in the beginnings of an escalate illy trap.
And all the more so that none of this helps Ukraine. I mean, this is complete folly. It doesn't secure their security or interests. Alistair, we've run out of time, and this has been an absolutely fascinating discussion. You're always welcome back on Crosstalk. We're thanking Alistair Crook in Rome, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.